Okay, and it says we are live. So, hello, hello. I'm Dan, and this is, go ahead and introduce yourself, please.
Hey, I'm Mike Wandering Wolf, and dude, thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure to actually finally connect. I've been watching your stuff, and like we were just talking about a minute ago, loving what you're doing right now. It's awesome stuff, and been a pleasure to watch and be a part and witness.
Well, thanks, Mike. I really appreciate you coming on. I've been really interested in the work that you've been doing for a while. It's pretty I mean, I hate to say it, but I think it's a little bit on the underrated side. Like I just said to you before we started, it's like a lot of people know you from the Sage Wall, which is cool as hell. But there's like you want to just let some of these guys know what you do about yourself? I could tell them, but I'd be wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. I travel all over the world, filming ancient sites. I've been documenting ancient sites for years now. Sage Walls just kind of happened to be one location that blew up for me. It was relatively unknown. There were videos out about it, but it was kind of had hit the bigger, like kind of wider consciousness, so to speak. And I think what really did it was the drone footage. But I drone sites all over the world. Some of the other places that I've been gotten a lot of attention from are the Long UK, Jiangshan Quarry, different stuff like that. So I really try to get to places that haven't had a lot of attention and document those sites, film them, especially with the drone footage, because it just gives it such a different perspective for the viewer.
Yeah, a lot of your drone footage is pretty impressive. I mean, I have to say, like, it's professional, like not just professional quality, as in like you've sold quite a bit of it, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, I'm on Ancient Aliens right now. So their episode they dropped this week, and the next three episodes you can see my drone footage there as they cover Puma Punku. And when I went to Bolivia, that was one of the more interesting trips I've ever been on. But we were lucky enough while we were down there to get the site all to ourselves, because it was right at the height of COVID, right in the middle. I mean, tourism was shut down. There was nobody there. So I had some of the only footage that I've seen where there's just nobody in any shot anywhere, which was really cool to be able to walk those sites, Tiwanaku and Puma Punku, completely by myself. That was amazing.
Yeah, that would be kind of wild.
But yeah, Bolivia was an interesting trip. And that's one of the things that I also love about what I do, is getting out to some of these far out locations and having these experiences. I mean, the morning that we filmed Puma Punku, a guy got stabbed up against my window, right outside my window. He got stabbed to death. And
Oh,
that, yeah, the night
man.
before flying into La Paz, we had a baby that was like dying on the plane, choking. And my cousin, who's an anesthesiologist who was traveling with me, was able to resuscitate it.
Holy crap.
It was so, that was a wild trip.
Sounds like it.
But yeah, getting to these different locations around the world and filming them, definitely the focus is getting to these ancient sites and documenting them, and then sharing them in a way where people can view them for themselves. You'll notice that a lot of my videos are just drone videos. There's no commentary or anything. And that's intentional, because I really do. It's probably not to my benefit, which is why I'm not as well known, because my videos get ripped off. Not ripped off, but they get used for other videos and stuff all the time by huge,
Of
big kind
course.
of nameless channels. But I want the viewer to get a perspective on some of these places that doesn't come with commentary about what they should think. And I think some of the best ways to do that are the drone videos. Also, the 360 videos that we've been doing for years, are VR videos. So you can watch VR videos and interact with the screen and move the camera to wherever you want. So we've when I say we, my cousin's been doing all the VR work with me over the years. So he's been filming hundreds of ancient sites around the world. And I've been doing the drone and different stuff like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, the footage is pretty amazing. I can see why. I mean, Eric from Ancient Epochs and this ancient watermark that shit. And I see where he's coming from. But and I also I have to respect what you say there about making sure not to like tell the audience what to think. And yes, that's you're dead on. I would have to say from like a YouTuber perspective, you would be way better off telling your audience, well, look at this feature. You, what do you think about this? Doesn't that make you think? All those things would definitely, but when you're just going there and doing what your intention is to just document the site, that's, I just covered in a video recently about the archaeologist, J. Harlan Bretz, that discovered the big flood that went through the channeled scab lands that Randall Carlson's on the finishing his tour with right now, as a matter of fact. The guy that figured that one out, when he taught his students, if he was going to send them to a site to do field work and they would ask what to read first, he would tell them nothing. Go do it on your own. And when you come back, he would let them read what the other people had figured out as extra credit. But do it on your own. You know how to do geology, right? Well, go do it on your own. Don't lean on the guy before you. And the same thinking, keep that clear lens. And so I got a lot of respect for that. I'm glad that places like Ancient Aliens and stuff at least picks up your stuff. So you are, even if your sub count is view count is a lot lower than it should be for the work you put in, at least somebody's throwing you a dollar for the damn stuff, right?
Yeah. people are watching it. They just don't know that they're watching my stuff a lot of times. So, but you know, I think there's a level of longevity that I see in what I do. And I think a lot of that it'll come out eventually or whatever, or the subs or the views or whatever, all that, you know, that'll all happen. But
oh, yeah.
I used to study sites before I went to them and just learn everything that I could about them. So on camera, because I do have videos where I'm talking, or it's like more vlog-like, or I'm sharing my experience with people. So it's not like all of my videos are silent. So you can watch me walk through sites and talk to the camera and do stuff. I have all kinds of videos. But I used to prepare before I went to these sites so much. And what I realized was happening was I was going to some of these sites and I was missing things because in my head, I'd already studied the site, studied the history, studied all what people said were important about these places. And so I was walking right past stuff to get the things that I'd already read about. And when I stopped doing that, I slowed down at sites and I started looking at things with a lot more, in a lot more detail. And so now it's not like I don't learn about the sites or know about the sites before I go to them, but I don't fill my head up with trying to shot plan and script write or do anything like that. I just walk the site and take the viewer with me and try to share my experience typically.
That makes sense.
That'll allow me to see things that maybe I would have missed otherwise.
Yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of details to these sites. Like just a little bit more of a macro scale of an individual site. But like in archaeology, they talk about archaeological bias, which is where like the Great Pyramid gets, you know, a bajillion times more interest than Menkaure's Pyramid, even though they're both big and impressive.
Right.
That's just how it is. So if you go to a site and everybody's like, hey, check out the gate. That's what everybody focuses on. And
yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. 100%. Yeah. And you know, if you're going to a site like the Great Pyramid, it's a perfect example. I mean, you should walk around the entire pyramid. I mean, there's nubs and stuff sticking out of the base of it, and these, you know, all sorts of interesting things to see around the base of the pyramid. You know, but if you're in a tour group or something, you know, they're taking you from point to point. And if you're going with somebody that's been there before, they might be the same. So it's just, you know, having fresh eyes, so to speak, when you go to a new place and having the time. That was something else I had to learn when I was traveling. I try to pack so much in to get content that I'd be hitting 2, 3, sometimes 4 sites a day if they were close enough for an area, you know, like Cambodia, for example, was really easy to like hit a ton of sites in a single day. And once I started taking that out and allowing myself more time, then I could explore a site and really give it the attention that it deserved. You know, a site like Baalbek, you should be walking around and exploring for several days. But people come in, see it, and leave and within hours. But, you know, I spent 2 full days there, and each day was seeing something new. There's a lot of debate, I think, especially within our community, about the ancient history community, about, you know, is it important to see some of these things in person? And I'd have to say absolutely 100%, if you're able, right? I'm not saying that there isn't a level of contribution that can't be made from studying things online and different stuff like that. 100% am not saying that. But there's stuff like, I've done recently, the video that I'm working on now is from data that I've collected around the world from cart ruts. And we have cart ruts here in America. We have them in my city, Austin, Texas.
Oh, wow.
Two different sites, cart rut sites. So what I did was LIDAR both of these areas in Malta and other places. So we've been breaking down the data for months and comparing them. And we're looking at one site. We were, doing measurements with all the data that we have on these LIDAR sites. And I remembered, we could be measuring these wrong because they're four tracks laid out together. Because I'd been there, I was able to remember, no, these tracks are actually parallel here, but they further down, they cross. But you wouldn't know that if you hadn't been there and walked the site. I wouldn't know to correct that while working on that data if I hadn't been there.
That makes real good sense. There's a ton of stuff that I've looked for that I find is not documented about a site, that they'll mention it, but there's almost no details on it. So like what you just said, right, it's the kind of thing you either know or you don't. It's not going to be in the books. Oh, by the way, the carts cross here and the ruts cross there and then back straight. That's not something you're going to see most likely, unless there's a flat out map of it drawn. So
yeah. Well, and the drone stuff is another thing that helps. You get these perspectives that didn't exist before, and somebody's got to do it. And I'm happy to be that person. I just absolutely enjoy traveling, getting to these locations. There's an adventure aspect to it that I just love. So, I think more than happy to put that out to the community where people can break down the data and can look at stuff and can analyze pictures and videos and stuff and have more information.
Yeah, that's a big part of, I think one of the strengths of the community is that we can definitely play too. Those of us that are trying not to argue with each other too much, even though some of us might have disagreeing opinions here and there, things like that, where you bring up here's a whole bunch of just raw data, basically. And then you can get 20 different things going 20 different directions on it. And that's not necessarily a bad thing.
It's a good thing, I think, to have lots of different ideas going. And, times have changed. I think you and I are both old enough to remember when you could disagree with somebody without hating them.
Oh, God. I remember when that was the definition of diversity when I was a younger man. People that, it's funny, if you watch Netflix has it's a CNN special on there. It's a CNN special about like each decade. And it's like the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and 90s. Every single one of them, they're like, every time they talk about a president, that Bill Clinton, he sure didn't like Republicans, but he knew how to roll up his sleeves and make a deal for the betterment of the country. Every single fucking president they say that about, and then it's kind of just a full stop when you get to George W. Things just start to change, and now we're it's at the point where there is no compromise is a bad word, sir. Compromise is a bad word.
Right, and it's just wild to me because there's the pursuit of a common ground for all. It is a pointless effort. It's wasted energy. That will never happen. people are different. People have different opinions. People like different things, want different things. The only answer is compromise and communication, accepting people and their ideas, even if they're different from yours. You know, kind of like what we're talking, agreeing to disagree.
That's just it.
You know,
and there's places where that's not really acceptable. I think that we would all agree. There's places that you, agreeing to disagree isn't really an option, but that's where shit gets ugly and they like to conflate things. It's like, oh, you were to talk about big rocks and I can't agree to disagree with you and continue to bash at you on the internet. So now I'm going to accuse you of white supremacy. And
that's where we're at now.
You're dead on. That's where we're at. It's kind of messed up.
And I think that's bravo to what you're doing, because the pushback against that is been long overdue. Calling people out and for that type of escalation in the conversations is completely unwarranted and unnecessary, and it's very there's a shift that seems to be happening. At least this is what I'm kind of noticing, of people pushing back and saying, I'm not cool with this anymore. Like, I'm not just going to be quiet when people say horrible things to defame you or hurt your character, right? So, we all know what we're talking about here, right? But there's nothing constructive or bettering about any of that. So
no, it's and it detracts. Here's the thing: and it's funny that we saw this with the same kind of thinking could have applied with Keanu Reeves. It's one of the things that I thought, the way that everybody, the meltdown over that. It's like, they could be saying, I'm so glad Keanu Reeves is interested in ancient history. I'm so glad that he thinks prehistory is cool. I had no idea that he was into this shit. I thought that he was just an actor and that, I had no idea what his personal interests are. This is great.
Yeah.
So I'd love to talk to the guy and see where we disagree and where we could agree. Oh, no. So
Fix his brain.
Yeah, somebody got in there before us and planted that cancer.
Yeah, it's crazy. I had no idea that Keanu Reeves was interested into this stuff. And you guys are going to come down on Keanu Reeves? He's like the most loved dude in a celebrity on the planet. It's like, okay, so, this whole idea that we could have a conversation, that's not, and we're talking about the same text here or tweet, mm-hmm. is, that's, can we get a hold of this Keanu Reeves and have a conversation? What you really mean is, can we get a hold of him and educate him to our way of thinking, right? As if he's not an adult who is fully capable of making his own decisions and knew what he was getting into going on that show.
Yeah.
So clearly he has an opinion and he's picked his camp about what he's interested in.
And that's just unacceptable. That's unacceptable.
So good luck vilifying Keanu Reeves. Have fun with that.
Oh man. Yeah. No, it won't work out. They can't, And the trying to reach him through through his little wall of separation between his fans and the internet, that's a little bit nothing. That's to me, that's pretty messed up. Somebody puts a wall like that up, it's there for a reason. Respect it. The paparazzi doesn't, and they get punched in the face from time to time for it. The rest of us know better. Well, most of the rest of us.
Right.
But
the guy doesn't have any social media for a reason.
Yeah. He don't want to do it. And he is like you say, he's so beloved that it's like, you can't really, I had one comment on my video where somebody said something bad about it and I haven't looked back at it yet, but I'm wondering if it just gets completely ignored or if it just gets hate mobbed, but one of the two, it won't be.
Yeah, come back in a couple days and see.
Yeah, if you look up, when I was doing research for the video, and I look up like Keanu Reeves, But Keanu Reeves haters, Keanu Reeves drama, and like every fucking search, Keanu Reeves, top 10 celebrities, 10 reasons we love Keanu Reeves. It did not matter what you typed in about him. If it was bad, it was just, it may as well be good. That's all you're getting.
He's universally loved. I mean,
he is.
I honestly don't hope that it continues, but if it does, any kind of hate and stuff, I think people will start paying attention. Like, why are these people acting this way?
It's the,
cool thing about, you know, people that are putting negative out in the world is you generally don't have to do anything. They're, you know, they expose themselves over time. And that's really what it is. It's just time. And it's the same thing with any of these type of alternative theories is time. That's all you just keep working at stuff. And whether like with the stuff that I'm doing with the cart ruts or Sage Wall, it's like, you just need time. Everybody has an opinion, but you just put the work in and eventually you'll get some, you know, you hope interesting answers and things like that, that are new or new to people or whatever. So,
well, even if you don't, you need, if there's something there that's tantalizing and sends you down that rabbit hole and you come up, you know, snake eyes, you know, that's still a gain in scientific knowledge. It's not somebody who was skeptical of the site going in and saying, oh, look, I found exactly what I expected to. It's somebody going in and trying to find something and they don't. That's still a gain in knowledge.
Right.
And what you said about time is dead accurate. You know who Thor Heyerdahl was? He is a guy that did the, like, back in the 60s, he did the rafting across the ocean shit to kind of prove that it could be done by Polynesians way back in the day. And he was the first person to posit that the masonry on Rapa Nui on Easter Island was related to the masonry in Peru. And that was mocked for decades. And
how long ago was that?
That's in the 60s.
Okay.
And that was mocked for the last, you know, six decades. But now we find DNA evidence, both in plants and humans, that confirms that those rocks were probably influenced by one another. And he was mocked for all this time. But like you say, just give it time. And the truth will come out.
What was it in the last year they discovered with Easter Island, plant evidence tying Easter Island to Peru? So there's physical evidence now showing the connectedness between Easter Island and Peru. And I first saw that from our buddy illegitimate scholar posted about that a while back. And it's just time. So it's like, you got to just tune people out, but just like, you know. And unfortunately, it feels, I'm not saying it is, because I don't hate archaeologists and I don't have anything against the archaeological community, but it sure feels like the archaeological community very much is like the sit down and shut up crowd. You know? My life story is been about not listening to those people and keep forging your own path. Yep. So, you know, like you or me or Jimmy or Graham or anybody that's doing the type of stuff that we're doing is going to listen, is going to stop because these guys need to stop. So, you know, pissing into the wind if you want, but I think the more that a lot of the stuff is shared, it's always kind of interested me that they are more embracing of, there isn't a bigger level of embracing the community if what they do is, if what they're all about is teaching. You have interest in ancient history at an all-time high in history, at least in history, anything within anybody's lifetime that's alive today, the interest levels in ancient history is at an all-time high. There's plenty of people that you could be, that want to listen to what archaeologists have to say and learn. And I would think you'd be kind of scooping up that crowd and teaching to the people that want to listen and want to be a part of that, because they're there.
Yeah, it's a big wasted resource. I mean, as far as I made a stink about it a few months ago when Jimmy posted about Neanderthals and Homo erectus maybe being, or no, Neanderthals and Homo, I forget which one, Denisovans, that was it. Neanderthals and Denisovans were maybe what the Bible referred to when it talked about Nephilim being these giants that were our ancestors. And like all these archaeologists and people like that that yell at Jimmy all the time come in and start saying the whole, well, actually, you know, Neanderthals and Denisovans were thought to be slightly smaller than the humans. So that's, how do you have, these wouldn't be giants. So how would that work with your whole little freaking Nephilim thing? Got you there, Jim. And it's like, I mean, okay, but I did my little quotation mark. The example that I would have done was more like, well, you know, that's an interesting idea. These ones were a little bit smaller, but there's other hominid species that were bigger. Maybe you should try checking out some other things, because you have an interested amateur that you could send down the rabbit hole, right, or you could just tell them to fuck off. And so they chose to tell them to fuck off. They do that across the board consistently. And it's not all archaeologists that do that, but the ones that are active online do that, and they're so hegemonic and so toxic about it that anybody else is afraid to stick their head above water. I mean, there's one archaeologist, Daskalos, that I talk to every now and again on Twitter, and he's like, he'll pop up and talk every now and again, pop up and talk in one of these little live stream chats and say hi. He's done a debunking video on Any Minute Man, and he's a real archaeologist, but he's afraid to voice his opinion because he likes a paycheck.
Yeah, and you can have the letters behind your name and have an opinion and say stuff as long as you toe the line. If you don't, then, I mean, how many guys out there that are a part of the profession that, you know, do have quite a few letters behind their name that are vilified for having these, you know, exploring outside the box theories? All of them.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, it's unfortunate, because I like to look for opportunity, and I know that if I was in that position, I'd be seeing opportunity. You know, I remember Flint talking about on the debate with Graham on Rogan that, you know, museums and universities are shutting down, and I don't want that.
No,
but who's to blame for that? Because like we've just laid out here, interest in ancient history is at an all-time high. You know what? If I was going back to school, I might not go because I don't want to sit in a class with a fucking somebody like Flint Dibble. That's the answer. I don't want to be preached at, right? Like, and there's a difference between like instructing and teaching, but that's not what I'm getting from a lot of the conversations and stuff that are going online. And the idea that you could be one person in class and another person online, or one person in your personal life and another person socially, like, you know, I don't know that doesn't quite gel for me. So, you know, I have to assume that you know, if you have a differing attitude that goes against the grain while you were in a class, you'd get the same kind of pushback or an F or a D or whatever in your class for questioning the narrative instead of reciting back verbatim.
Yeah.
So
I would have to agree.
People are coming over and watching, you know, that's why Jimmy gets a million views on his videos. You know, that's why season two of Netflix is Graham's Ancient Apocalypse is going to be a barn burner when it releases in numbers.
And you can, and like me and Mark Young talked about, it's so funny, like the closest thing archaeology had to Ancient Apocalypse season one was the that Caves in the Deli thing, where the Cave of Bones with Lee Berger and the Homo Nedeli and their little I don't know if you saw that, but it was pretty interesting about a pre-human hominid species that looked to be using fire and going through all these pains to deposit their dead in this cave. And it was really interesting stuff, but he also got blasted, but it got blasted by archaeologists, the archaeologists that did that. But it was a fraction of the interest in Ancient Apocalypse got. And they, instead of like playing off of that and leeching that popularity in ancient history, I mean, there, Gunung Padang is a great example. There was so much they could easily get funding and run with that site after Ancient Apocalypse, but instead they ignore it. Yeah. And by ignoring it, we end up with like, what now? We have an argument over how old it is, and it's not even fully excavated, and it's so we get nothing. We get a bug fat nothing.
Yeah, and I don't the dismissal of that site in particular is akin to the same type of behavior the archaeology community, is chiding others for about thinking outside the box about things. So you haven't even done the work. There's enough evidence there to warrant a further investigation, and you guys are dismissing it out of hand at a site like Gunung Padang. And that one just blows my mind. I don't even know what else to say. That's crazy. It's crazy that the work that's been done and the work that we do have, and that there's a community of people that think it's not worth investigating further.
What's really sad about that is that they're the same people. It's like the PR game is something that they just on a fundamental level they shit the bed on. And this is a perfect example. This is, dude. Everybody accuses you guys of hiding information. You guys fucking will not let us dig where we want to dig. You never want to let us see the things we want to see. You always hide the info. So, you guys think that place might be a 25,000-year-old pyramid? Fuck you. No digs. Stop it. We're going to find a problem with it somehow.
It's wild to me. I mean, because the assumption I thought was that we're trying to uncover things, and then you start getting into these topics like Göbekli Tepe, covering up sites and stuff like that. I'll tell you right now, we went into this on a recent live stream that I was on with Jimmy, was, if you start getting into sites like Göbekli Tepe, and this is just from something, from experience, from travel, and having been to so many sites around the world, is what's going on at Göbekli Tepe is just money. The place has been turned and is being turned into a revenue stream. So years ago, the tourist level going out to Göbekli Tepe was very minimal. And I think you now have something like 500,000 people a year visiting that site. Okay. So that alone explains the roads being built and the beautification of the site. The other thing is that you take a look at the cover. Jimmy made a great tweet talking about how that cover over the site provides no type of protection or anything. It's a shade cover, and you see these at every site. It's the exact same type of construction that you find everywhere in the world, where these places have been, all research and stuff has basically stopped or come to a crawl because it's now a tourist site. So you have walkways built around the site. You have these shade structures for people, so they're out of the rain or out of the sun or whatever. And you've just cleared out the main portion of the site. And eventually there's a ticket booth there and a road that drives all the way up right almost to the entrance, so the tour buses can unload and the people can go through the ticket booth, and they're walking directly right into the site to see it. And that's what's happening at Göbekli Tepe. I don't need a degree in anything to know that. I can see it. And I've been to hundreds, if not more, sites around the world and have watched sites progress over the years that I've been to multiple times into things like this. So it's, you know, that's the real unfortunate thing. Is this just worldwide? Is it just, if you're ever unsure, just start looking at where the money is. You know, so that place doesn't make any money if you shut it down and do excavations, full excavations and uncovering of the site, and you were to, you know, excavate that entire area, because it's a large area.
Yeah. And, so, well, yeah, it would definitely, it would definitely shut down tourism, and that would cost them a big chunk of change. It's a poor part of the world. So it makes sense that dragging in tourist dollars is going to go a long way. It's not just the tickets to the site, you know, it's pumping revenue into the infrastructure, period. You come in and get a hotel and buy a burger and rent a jackass to ride around on, and a tour guide and interpreter and all that, right?
The whole system.
Yep.
Forgive me.
I'm
living off coffee.
I understand that. I'm actually, this is my first day of like arthritis relief in like 4 days. My knee has just gone like mad the last few days.
Really?
I to a point I could barely sleep where, last night when, I got about 3 hours of sleep last night because they finally prescribed me some steroids that have made the swelling go down. But it was old man disease sucks. Uh-oh. Hello? I seem to have lost Mike. Are you there, Mike? Oh.
Can you hear me?
Oh, there we go. I've got you back. Okay.
I don't know what happened there, Mike. Oh, dude.
You're all good?
Okay, it's doing it again on my screen. I don't know what's going on. My whole... Okay.
You're all fine. You're fine, man. It's just...
I'm gonna stop touching things.
It's the internet. It's okay. It's all good. I've had this happen ever since the days of Doom. So.
You say Doom?
Yeah, Quake was
showing your age there.
Oh God, yeah. Well, that's. I think the gray does that, but yeah. Yeah, remember the good old days when. One of the things I've laughed about a lot is that the biggest change to the internet was the old days when you had to have at least some degree of technical skill to get on. So there was no housewives, there was no teenagers, there was no college kids. The only people that showed up were like tech geeks to some degree. They were nerds. So you did have, you know, teenagers and housewives and stuff, but they all were kind of nerds. And so people didn't get upset when you said like shitty things to each other. And the place was a lot more of a wild freaking wild west nut job of a place before they even had search engines and shit, basically, where, I mean, they had them, but they weren't. You just went on the www.superman.com. Okay. www.clarkkent.com. Okay. Then you stumble on all kinds of fun shit. Yep. Diablo, yeah. Shaman points out Diablo was the first one I really cracked out on with online play. That one I spent hours on. Not proudly to say, but I did.
my thing was Civilization. I got playing Civilization back in the day, and I would sit there for 12 hours playing that, moving little squares around.
You know? Oh, yeah. The good old days.
Oh, yeah.
Back then, that was like about the time that Fingerprints of the Gods came out. That was... I remember pre-ordering that at Hastings, 95.
Yeah. I'd have been, those were crazy years for me. I think I was 15, but I was already getting into trouble and doing crazy shit. And I think 5 years later is when I joined the military in 2000. Mm.
Yeah, I was married at the time and in the Army then. and had read what was A Sign and the Seal. I don't know if you've read that. It was Hancock's first kind of alternate history book, and Search the Ark of the Covenant. And I thought that was cool as hell. And
so you've been on it for a minute. How long? Oh,
I've got magazines here from like when I was like 15 and 16 that are talking about ancient Egypt and stuff that were, I got the term pyramidiot from a KMT magazine, and those are like just an Egyptology magazine. It's nothing, Atlantis at all, but it had in the editorial section, some guys like, you'd get more money if you catered to some of us pyramidiots. And I was like, fuck, I love that term. That's great. But yeah, it was in fourth grade when I really first got interested in ancient Egypt. We had an Egypt day in my art class, and the teacher like was showing us all this stuff and talking about how their religion was intertwined with their buildings and all this stuff. And I just thought it was so cool that they were like able to accomplish all this stuff and had this weird religion that was different than mine. I grew up real Christian, so it was just like all of it was just real tantalizing out the gate. And then as I got older and looked more and more, and there's still mysteries that hold up. Even though you get older, if you're skeptical, a lot of the mysteries do get shaken out and proven to be not so mysterious, but a lot of them hold up.
That's awesome. I was a little bit late to the party. I think my path is a little bit more winding and like figuring out what I wanted to do. As far as being passionate about ancient history. The military had a huge hand in that. I was in during when 9/11 happened. So I experienced a lot of the blowback there within the military from that happening, and how things were so different before than after. And then just being in the military gives you an inside perspective into our government, the system, things not being what you're told they are. And a lot of the stuff that the people are, and the reasons why people are serving, you start realizing you were sold a lie about a lot of stuff. And that's not to say that, like, because I learned some of the most valuable things in my life from my time in the military, things like discipline and respect and brotherhood and loyalty. But when I got out, 9/11 was so impactful for me being in while I was in that it really made me start questioning things. And that was the rabbit hole that kicked it all off for me. So that was 2003 or so when I got out and really started saying, this shit just didn't add up. Some of this stuff just doesn't add up. And that's just went down a rabbit hole, eventually of YouTube videos. And here we are.
I guess that's 20 years of still being in the game for a bit. I mean, it's not like you just started.
Yeah. I think I've been traveling now for 8 years.
I took quite a bit off a time off when I got custody of my kid, and like I just quit doing. Quit buying books, quit reading, quit watching stuff on it for the most part. Every now and again, I would watch a video on YouTube, but for the most part, I just kind of got out of it because I didn't have time.
Yeah.
I guess Jimmy is having a live stream right now, too.
Is he?
And gave us a shout out. So, hey, Jim, thanks. Yeah, here's a shout out for you, too. Guys, if you don't want to listen to us, you can go talk to Jim, but you totally want to listen to us, right?
That's right.
Yeah. That's right.
Let's beat Jimmy.
Let's beat Jimmy. Now we sound like archaeologists. Let's beat Jimmy.
I love Jimmy. He's a good guy. He's a good friend.
I like Jim. I know a lot of people have problems with him, and I it's funny. I've had nothing but good from him. Like not one bit. Even when I've made videos picking on him and shit. He was like, yeah, that's pretty funny, man. I don't agree, but it's all right. Here you go.
I think people get surprised when they go after Jimmy and he punches back. You know?
That might be it. I am finding, like, I found very quickly that as soon as I ran afoul of the whole archaeology crowd, as soon as I started making those videos about the debate, really, and really pissing off archaeologists a lot, all of a sudden I was getting accused. I'll get comments just to all kinds of just stupid shit that has fuck all to do with what I'm talking about. It is not at all who I am, but it makes it easy for them to demonize. Oh, we got just another blah, 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 blah. Yeah, come
sure.
on.
Yeah.
And so it's really easy to see where Jim got the reputation that he has, because people are just like, you just see it everywhere all the time.
Yeah. And I think there's you get to a certain level. I'm starting to experience a little bit of it right now. You get to a level of where people start expecting things from you as if you are required to focus on this site or talk about this topic or, that's not how this works, right? I'm doing what the fuck I want to do because I want to fucking do what I want to fucking do. That's why I started doing this.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what I'm going to keep doing. So you like it or, and I don't, I get requests to go visit places or see things sometimes. I can't go everywhere in the world. I have to be selective. I want to. But I think when you get as big as Jimmy, there's a level of expectation that's placed on you all the time. And I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
Dealing with that at that level. So, I have a lot of sympathy for and empathy for large platforms, guys that are putting out content, breaking their back, because it's not super easy to put out content on a regular basis that is entertaining and good for your, and connect with your viewers, know what they want, what they're after, and make things that are impactful. Be entertaining, still do what you want, and keep yourself happy enough to keep doing what you're doing, right? Because you can get burnt out on this. I don't think I've talked to anybody that hasn't hit some level of creative fatigue at some point if you've been doing this long enough. I think for anybody making content, and if you're putting stuff out there that people that's kind of like bringing something to a greater level of awareness, just be supportive. Or you can always just not say anything and just focus on the things that you like.
Well, there's a lot of the expectation side. I get a lot of that because I will. Like my video that I just recently did about Ben's vases, where I retracted something I got wrong before, but I'm still not of the opinion that those were made from like high technology. And that's the kind of thing that for a guy on our side of the fence is it's not, most guys won't say something like that. Right. So I've been debunking both sides of the fence since day one, pretty much. So I get a lot of people that are expecting me to put an equal amount of energy into both of those. And it's like, well, dude, Graham Hancock has like 1,000 videos debunking him. And Flint Dibble has like 10, and 9 of those are mine. not literally, but that's about where it is. Right. It's like, come on, you guys, there's a reason that I'm focusing more attention here. It's like, I was talking to one of my friends on Facebook that was asking me about that. It's like, man, it's like we got a dirty house. If half of it's being cleaned for the last 20 years and half of it hasn't been touched in 20 years, I'm going to the dirty half first, man. I don't know what to fucking tell you.
Yeah.
That's.
Yeah.
But there are. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, I love that about you. And I feel like you've kind of shot into this space like a fucking cruise missile over the last year, And it's been awesome to see just
thanks, man.
You do that because I don't think anybody should be immune to criticism or having ideas and things questioned and called out. I mean, you know, it's how is the person who's the focus of that attention handling that? Because I've had, you know, working with the property owners, Chris and Linda, up at Safe Wall for the last like 3 years, there's plenty of people that are just like, you know, it's natural, blah, 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 whatever. Mm-hmm. Tons of people. Cool, man, I get it. But I'm going to keep doing the work with them. Like, I'm going to keep documenting it and sharing. Like, they're doing work up there, like aerial LIDAR, lab analysis is, ground penetrating radar. They're doing all these different things. Like, we're, you know, they're not, and I'm not going to stop the stuff that we're doing just because somebody's being critiqued. So I think there's a, you know, criticism or putting things under a microscope is healthy. And I think clearly you're doing it in a way, I mean, maybe not, you know, with Dibble, but they do need to be called out. But like, if you're making a video about Jimmy and saying, I don't agree with this, or Ben, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
You know?
I think I've said it before that like the dreamers and the skeptics have traditionally worked together to get us places, and they've kind of separated into their own camps now. And that's you end up with dreamers that just kind of, they get to do whatever, make up whatever hypotheses they want, and nobody's there to kind of reel them back into reality. And then the skeptics, they're all over here just pissing up the rope. Everything that they see, they attack. And I mean, could you imagine being a professional skeptic right now when the U.S. government's like talking about UFOs and shit, and you're like, it's my job to go out and like use all these U.S. government sources to debunk the U.S. government? It's like, fucking man, what a shitty day to be a skeptic. But I call myself a skeptic, but you know, it's like, if that's what your shtick is, that's being skeptical doesn't mean being cynical. It means that you give things a fair shake. And if you inject your personal biases, your predetermined beliefs into it, you're not being skeptical. You're just using your own lens. And that science endeavors to stop that. So I think at every individual that's engaging in some sort of science should try to be as impartial as they can, which we definitely do not see from the scientists that, at least that I've encountered online, the vast majority.
Which is really odd, because science is supposed to, you know, hold up to scrutiny. There's a level of scrutiny that's supposed to be applied to different things like that. Now, I can understand from archaeologists' perspective, people just throwing out random things and saying, you know, what, you know, wild stuff. Because don't get me wrong, there's a lot of wild ideas out there. And a lot of it kind of exists within this community of alt history, whatever you want to. Mm-hmm. But if people have, you know, they're doing valid work, or they're doing work that questions a certain narrative or whatever, and they're providing a certain level of, you know, Graham, for example, in the site, Gunam Padang, you know, and bringing that to light, well, that should be looked at. Like, you know, isn't that what science is testing things and, you know, holding it up to a level of scrutiny? And not sticking to a narrative, right, is challenging those things. The truth is the truth, and it'll hold up under scrutiny.
Yeah.
You know, somebody standing on truth about something in facts, there's no need to try to silence other things. If somebody's exploring and actually genuinely looking for the truth, then you're standing at it. They'll find their way to you.
You know? Yeah, that's true. I can't argue with that. It's the truth does tend to rise if given time, like we were saying earlier.
And it's time.
Yeah.
It's time, but we live in this culture now that just grabs onto every new thing or whatever quickly. you know, and people are arguing in real time about facts, right? When things just take, sometimes it just takes time, so you just,
Well, when they have frameworks built up, that's a lot of it with the sciences that have allowed, that allow for more personal interpretation. That's where you end up, even in geology, where the egos clash is where the personal interpretations are way different. And that's because these personal interpretations were conjured. They are the products of imagination working off of the information that they have, the evidence that they have, but the imagination takes that step. And that's where these people get like a personal investment. They look at like the Clovis first hypothesis. They look at the positioning of these ice sheets and at the dates of all of these things. And they're like, oh, this just lines up so perfectly. This has to be it. And so once they've got their self invested in that narrative, they have, it's a far more personal thing than it is in a lot of other sciences.
Yeah, it's always some parts of these, this institutionalized frames of thinking is you start getting into people who've built entire careers around and their reputation around these ideas. So you'd be talking about sometimes dismantling 40, 50 years of work around somebody's life.
Yeah.
Who's put out books and is a tenured professor somewhere and been teaching about it for forever. If you made a new discovery on this thing, or you changed the narrative, or you, whatever, you know, I like to say textbooks in college or colleges are not cheap. And I don't think they want to rewrite any of those.
No. Well, they try to rewrite them every couple of years, but they try not to add too much information. They try not to detract too much. Either. Yeah, just keep it the same, get more money. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I should say, hey Sam, how's it going? But I wanted to ask you about the Sage Wall. I haven't done a video on it, and you're probably the most knowledgeable person about it that we've got on the internets here. So since I've got you here, you want to talk a little bit about that site?
Yeah, it's an amazing site. The first time I ever walked up to it, it really blew me away. The thing that I was most able to compare it to was it walking up to Sacsayhuaman for the first time. And so, you know, it sits on a couple's property, Chris and Linda. They're the property owners, so it's on private land. The wall's massive. So they've been funding research on it themselves and opening it to the community for years now. So you can actually go view it. There, you have to book a time slot online through their site, and you have to there's a fee, because having people onto their property, you know, takes, you know, they have to change. This has changed up their whole life.
Sure.
From what they originally started doing up there. But the wall, I think, you know, I was originally had a trip to Russia planned, and everything, I wanted to get out to Brunei Shoria and film that. And I had the whole trip booked, except for my plane tickets. I was waiting to buy those, but I had the guide and stuff, and everything happened with Ukraine. And the sanctions came down on Russia. So it didn't feel like a good idea to do it, because I wouldn't have been able to use any of my cards or anything over there. I would have had to bring cash, and walking around with enough cash for several weeks to get by, which just didn't feel like a good idea. So I needed to shift focus. And the first place that I heard about Sage Wall was, and I don't know, I don't think he's running the website anymore, but I think he has a YouTube channel too. It's History Shift, and he had stuff, information on Sage Wall and Tizer Dolmen. And when I saw the wall, I was just like, I have to go see this. So I started looking around on the internet. There were videos out, a few, but nothing really. I didn't really see anything conclusive. I just knew this was something that I wanted to see. And I knew if I could get drone footage of it, that'd be something completely new to everybody about this wall. And I felt like sharing the drone footage would really blow up. And that's exactly what happened. So when I got the drone footage and shared the drone footage, it started getting tons of attention, because you could see from an aerial perspective just how perfectly straight the wall is for the length of it and how massive it is. And a lot of these, what most people want to compare the wall to is like, you know, it's a geological dike. But most of the dikes generally push up vertically. You have these vertical fissures and stuff. Now you do have some vertical seams going down Safe Wall. But I think what we're looking at is a combination. Okay, so if the wall's man-made, right? Because I'm not saying definitively that it is.
Okay.
I'm wanting to do the work to show that there's enough evidence around the wall to support further ongoing investigation into the wall. And every time we do more work, every time Chris and Linda get more work back, it's like enough to be like, okay, like let's keep going with this, right?
Okay.
So we had the drone video, we got LIDAR results, real basic LIDAR with Polycam from a phone that my buddy Sean did and shared with us and showed this absolutely just completely crazy level of straightness along the entire length of the wall. Then they started doing lab analysis on the stone. The rock is highly magnetic, which in and of itself isn't abnormal at the levels that they have there for that type of granite in the Boulder batholith region. But it is a little bit higher than normal. You throw a magnet on a wall and it sticks to the wall. The GPR results and all of this you can find on my featured video. I have it's my main video on my page. It's called The Story of Sage Wall, and it breaks down and shares those lab results, shows the ground penetrating radar results and stuff like that. So if people want to dig into the stuff that I'm talking about, you can just go to my page, my YouTube channel, and it's the featured video on my channel. But the ground penetrating radar showed up what the gentleman who did it, who was a geophysicist, I believe, a reflector is what he called it. That is like a flat base 15 feet down or so, 15 to 20 feet down, if I remember correctly, a flat base. So the wall is on a flat surface down below, and which is pretty abnormal. You have all sorts of kind of surrounding evidence, the cup holes and different stuff that I've documented and shared in my videos. And so every year we keep kind of, so you're kind of limited on time too on how much you can work up there, because when the snows come, it's over for the year until all the snow melts for good. The other interesting thing outside of the geological aspects of the site are stuff that I put together and shared in the video about the company like Rio Tinto. So Rio Tinto is a multinational worldwide company. I think they're the second largest mining operation or mining company in the world. They do a lot of work in Australia. This is a company based out of the UK who have documented history of destroying ancient sites, specifically in Australia around Aboriginal sites. They've dynamited sites. They're responsible for destroying somewhere between 200 and 300 different ancient sites in Australia.
Wow!
In their mining operations, there've been all kinds of protests over there over the years. They've been ordered to pay all kinds of fines and stuff.
Wow!
This is the company that was selected by the National Park Service or Montana government, the state of Montana, I think, for looking into mineral deposits across the state and in specific areas, specifically in the Boulder Bathlands region. So kind of, you know, like just like a handful of years ago or so, black helicopters are start flying around all over the property up there by Sage Wall. They're, you know, checking out the site. So that it's just, you know, that's on a whole different thing, but definitely just is kind of odd. But you know, the work that's been done this year, Chris was able to do a bunch of really high-end LIDAR work, aerial LIDAR work. And he plans on sharing some of that or all of that. The cool thing about the property owner, Chris, and I is that we both believe in sharing everything. You know, I may put something together in a video and want to wait to put that out to the public till I can release it in some format that you can watch and enjoy or whatever. Sure. And get all the information. But we both want all the information out there, not to hold anything back or anything, right? So everything in that Sage Wall video that I've mentioned before on my channel has all the stuff, all the information, all the way up to the end of 2023, beginning of 24. And so we'll put out some more information as things come, and we're working together over the coming year. But it's very interesting whether it's, you know, whether it's natural or man-made. We're doing the, you know, there's good work going on out there that I think reveals a lot of information one way or the other. So it's we either get a greater understanding of how this really natural formation happened out there, which can be used for, you know, different stuff, you know, like different type of geological information and different stuff like that. Or we potentially find out that this is an ancient man-made yeah. piece of a structure, which completely rewrites the narrative.
Well, for Northern Hemisphere, for sure.
That would be one of the biggest finds.
Yeah.
You know, in my lifetime, in terms of history and rewriting the narrative and the story. So I don't see any lose in this scenario, you know.
No.
It's just pursue that avenue of gathering this information and stuff. So. You know, you can go watch the drone videos and stuff. They're just straight drone videos that give you great aerial perspectives of the site. I have full walkthrough videos where I walk the entire site and I'm not even saying anything. You can just go along with me on that video and walk through the site and see things like I'm seeing them and like you're there. You can watch my videos where I'm talking about stuff and vlogging. You can watch my video where I'm breaking down all the data. So there's a bunch of videos that you can just partake in and really dive into that wall and check it out. And the attention that it's starting to get is awesome. Joe Rogan was showing it on his show the other day.
Yes.
Showing pictures of it. And that's great. I think that's great. So I don't know if you can hear that. My cat.
Yeah. My audio is still okay. It's sounding a little weird on my mic or my headphones.
So if you've seen me look over here a few times, because he's like popped out snoring next to me.
Oh, I want to say thank you to Benjamin there for the $20. I think that A stands for Australian, which is a fake country, I've been told. It's just Mexico version 2.0.
It's great till I see it. Right?
Nice. Just like to joke with my Aussie followers every now and again. I've got a few friends online. Exactly, Sam. You're right. It's not real. The Sage Wall is really interesting. How far from Glacier National Park is that?
Sage Wall?
Yeah.
Glacier National Park is on the other side of Montana west. Okay. So it's, I don't know exactly, but.
I'm trying to gauge because I want to visit, and I'm on the other side of the
state, yeah.
Washington, right? So it's clear on the other side of the state for me.
Yeah.
Montana's a big boy too to
drive. Well, I know this. One of the first times that I was out there filming, and I will say this, if you go out there and you want to put a drone up and film, I believe you can do that. You do have to pay for that mm-hmm. to fly on their property. But I think you can do that. Just be careful, because I've crashed a drone out there. The magnetics of the rocks, and that being such a huge slab, can interfere with your geolocation on your drone. And my drone just nosedived and crashed right into a rock out there. I had to drive out to Missoula. Missoula was a good, I think, like 3+ hours from Sagewall. And you would have to go further past that to get to Glacier National Park.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah, just trying to get an idea. I was up near Glacier National Park to hit the hot springs here a couple of 3 years ago.
Yeah. It's beautiful country up there. I've actually got this. I was recently up there, and I went to the Wise River Club, and Tim Montana, who's an awesome musician. He's on tour right now. Hosted me up there, and that's out more towards that way. Not quite as far, but out towards that way. Beautiful country. Montana is just gorgeous. I usually go to places, spend a bunch of time there, film it, and then I pick something new. And I've been going back to Montana enough now that I'm like, this almost is starting to feel like a second home. You know, it's just beautiful up there.
It is.
So, yeah.
I used to drive through there a lot more regularly than I do now, but not through the whole thing, just the part that's near Idaho.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Beautiful country, yeah, and the people are amazing up in Montana. So friendly, and yeah, that's an awesome place. I look forward every year to going back now. This is great.
Yeah, let me know next time you're headed. Maybe I'll try to show up there and drink a beer with you before checking out the wall. Yeah,
that would be cool.
I probably won't fly a bunch of drone footage over there. If I need drone footage, I know this guy's channel. I'll just go lift it from and then put it over there. At least I'll put a link. I'll put a little spot to the B-roll. Here's all the guys. Here's all the guys I stole shit from.
Yeah, I'll take what I can get.
But it would be cool to sit down and have a beer with you, and I definitely want to check the site out. I mean, obviously that would be a great place to walk up and down and look at. The dolmens there are pretty fucking cool too, from what I saw.
It's hugely impressive. It's the site in Montana I focused on the most, because I think it has the potential to possibly reveal some things. You know, I'm not fully in the camp of, like, I have an open and questioning mind. And this falls into that category, just like we've talked about with Gnong Penang or the site off the coast of Japan. There's certain places around the world, and this is one of them, that I think warrant further investigation and are deserving of entertaining the idea of this
is DoorDash is here.
It definitely is deserving of this the continued work that's going on there, and we couldn't be more lucky than to have, you know, such amazing people like Chris and Linda, the property owners, who've opened their property to people, complete strangers, to come onto their property and land. And not only that, but they've taken it upon themselves to carve out trails, clear the site, and fund research, fund out of their own pocket, you know? So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's awesome, actually.
Yeah.
You know, I recently covered they talked about the East Wenatchee Clovis site, which Wenatchee's in Washington State. And it's the only Clovis site that was found in the Pacific Northwest. And it got shut down. There's actually trees on it right now because of conflict with the Native American tribes, and because the property owners wanted to make profit off of it. And it was this very a fine line, because they weren't very interested in the proper research. They wanted it to just basically, they wanted it to be a tourist site. And like you were talking about with Göbekli Tepe and stuff. Right. And the Native Americans up here, well, you've traveled around this section of the country a lot. You've traveled around the world a bit. I imagine you've noticed the tribes up in the Pacific Northwest have a lot more political teeth than they do in the rest of the country. They don't fuck around. Yeah. When it came to that site, they got it shut down. This was back in the 90s when it was late 80s, early 90s, but you read the newspaper articles and stuff, and they were working just fine with the Washington State archaeologists. They recognized the tenuous nature of this whole thing, but when the property owner realized the Washington State archaeologist was like, you're not going to fucking open a museum here and like shit can research and have these guys be on board with it, he switched to a New York archaeologist. That guy came in and is like, oh, let's open a museum. And the tribes all fucking back pushed hard against him. And now that site's in an apple orchard. And you can't really find it from what I understand. And I'm not surprised, because the arrowheads are worth a shitload of money and there's still a bunch in the ground there, but they ain't never going to get dug up in our lifetimes, and probably not in our kids' kids' lifetimes.
That's unfortunate. And it's interesting that you you talk about Clovis. I mentioned that in the video where I laid out all the data and stuff for Sagewall, is the Clovis Boy site where they found Clovis Boy I think it's less than 100 miles away from Sagewall, and all those artifacts and different stuff. So there's a whole history of, in that whole space and the area and region of, ancient stuff going on. So it's a cool mystery, little mystery to be a part of, trying to help unravel, or at least being lucky enough to document what's going on and share it with people. Really enjoyed that. Yeah.
So if somebody's asking if there's other giant rocks there near the Sage Wall, there's some dolmens there, right?
Yes, there. Perhaps. So there's a whole camp of people that are fully on everything up there is ancient something. And obviously you have conversely, you have the other side that, thinks all of that's natural. And there's several other sites that I think are very compelling. I've focused my work on Sagewall because I think, like I said before, I think it's the one that has the greatest potential to reveal something. It's also the most impressive. I feel like if we're going to find something, it's going to be there.
Okay.
I think a lot of people, probably the most well-known dolmen is Tizer Dolmen. And I think a lot of people I've visited Tizer Dolmen several times now. And after looking at it, I think it's hugely impressive. It's this massive feature of what seemed to be two blocks with a capstone on top of it. However, upon further examination of that site, it's clear that a massive boulder rolled into the back of it and split that rock in half, not just in half, but into three pieces. There is a third piece that's laying down on the ground directly next to it that you can see exactly where it split off from the main piece. So I don't think Tizer Dolmen is a dolmen. And there's other examples of upright rocks like that in the Boulder Batholith region. And while possibly they were man-made, I don't ever rule out the idea of pursuing a line of thought. And I also don't, this is my opinion, I think that there's compelling evidence to show everything that I just said, with that boulder rolling into the back of it, splitting the upright in half and knocking another piece down. I think all that's clear as day. But I would never want to shut down any other line of thought. There's plenty of space for everybody to pursue. of all these different lines of thoughts and reasoning. However, specifically with Tizer Dolman, not speaking about any other side, I think Tizer Dolman is more likely a natural formation, or if it was man-made, it's not in the original shape that it would have been created in.
Or they made it by rolling over a boulder.
You know, so I tend to now refer to Tizer Dolman as Tizer Monument. Okay. Per one of my friends' genius name creation that I stole from him, my buddy Ross. But there are other sites that look incredibly like a dome. And I just recently posted pictures of one up at Giants Playground that has walls, has a straight walkthrough front to back, capstone. It's all even on the heights. It is built into the side of this cliff, which is a little kind of drop. But that one would be the one that I would focus more attention on. However, if you're going out to Montana and you're seeing any of these sites, I would recommend seeing all of them, regardless of anything that I just said about Tizer Dolman. That is still a site that is so impressive to walk up on. And there's other stuff going on in the area that's interesting as well, right in and around Tizer Dolman. But as far as it being a dolmen that was placed in that position in two separate pieces, I don't think the evidence supports that. Yeah.
Okay. That sounds pretty interesting, though, just seeing that how it all came together there, like you said, with the rock rolling into it. And I mean, just that would be interesting just to look at right there.
Yeah. Yeah. And Sage, like I said, Sage Wall, walking up on Sage Wall was, you know, it was comparable to walking up to other things like Sacsayhuaman, where you walk up on a Sacsayhuaman and you see the placement of these just absolutely megalithic stones, and you're just like, what the hell? Like, you know, your brain takes a minute to catch up. Like, what's going on here? What am I looking at? And very same type of reaction at Sage Wall for me. I haven't met anybody that's visited Sage Wall that hasn't been absolutely blown away. Yeah, it's a really cool site.
Nice. Yeah, I definitely have to check it out. I got to address the magic nerd comment here, guys. If we're making a deck with no banned cards, I got 20 Lotuses, 20 Drain Lives, 20 Contract from Malos. So I win every game. All right, carry on. Sorry. They're wanting me to play against Flint Dibble with a magic with no banned cards. So if we're going to get
play any Magic?
Magic the Gathering, and we get any broken deck we want. Well, every game first turn. Well, I guess not. Force of Will exists. It doesn't work. I'm fucking old, guys. We didn't have Force of Will back in my day. But anyway, the Sage Wall, if it's not in poor taste, about how much does it cost to get onto the site, like onto the property? What do they charge?
They've been raising prices because this has taken over their lives. I think they're at $75 per person. So you can get access to the site, walk the site. You have time to explore around by yourself and do things. But they built everything on that property themselves. Their home, the cabins, the places and all that. Their focus was on sustainable living and showing people how to sustainably live. And now they're just having to manage people coming onto their property, you know? So it's like, it's wholly changed over the last couple of years. In order to enable this to continue to happen, they have to set their prices accordingly for the work that they have to miss now. So, you know, yeah, you do have to pay to go see it. I think it's completely worth it. But I do want people to understand that, because there has been a few pushbacks that I've seen on comments and stuff about the price. You do have to understand that in order for them to facilitate being able to let people onto their property like this and accommodate that, they've had to completely carve out a space of what they were doing with their life to make money and earn and their jobs and their life passion and work. They've had to take a whole chunk of all of that, put it to the side in order to enable this to happen for people. Not to mention, you know, the insurance and different things that they have to have now because of people just walking onto their property. Not only that, but people doing stuff that they shouldn't be doing, like climbing up the wall and jumping off the wall and going off trail and stuff like that, right? So
yeah,
there's risk involved in that, which is why, you know, they've always asked me to just point out to people when you go there, just be respectful, respect the rules of the site, stay on the trail. They back up to BLM land. Don't go past the limits there because you're not supposed to go on that land, the BLM land. Don't be damaging the rocks. People have pulled pieces off. People come out there and light incense and stuff. Don't start fires and do little prayers and things like that. You know, don't litter. Don't deface things. And everybody can enjoy the site. Yeah.
Yeah, right on. Yeah, it's. I definitely would like to check it out. I just wanted to make sure. I was just wondering, just for the followers, about just so they would know about how much it would cost. So if they, you know, drive it by, they wouldn't, you know, think it would be $20 and it'd be $100, or think it'd be $100 and it'd be $200.
Go to sagemountain.org. That's going to be their website. You can look on their website, sagemountain.org.
And they've recently changed. Okay.
You can see the pricing. You can see the rules. You can see
awesome,
you know, what that does. You can check out their story and all the stuff that I just shared. You can see all about them. They have a story about the Sage Wall as well.
And
there's a lot of information from that.
And you said they're spending a lot of money on actual research on the site, like bringing geologists.
Yeah, they're doing lab results. They're doing lab testing on the rocks, stone analysis. They've had people come out do the ground penetrating radar. They just finished not too long ago aerial LIDAR work, and are just now starting to get some of that data back. And so we'll be breaking down that and looking at it as they can. Some of that stuff's very complicated for anybody who doesn't have a background in that.
So the money that somebody spends to get into the site doesn't just all go into his hunting cabin or something. It's going into researching the place and stuff. All right.
Yeah. Cool. And the trails and stuff have to be maintained every year, you know.
And insurance, like you said, and all that stuff.
Right,
the profit side of it, he has to do the insurance. He has to do the trails. He doesn't have to hire a LIDAR boy. So that's where it's like, it's a good cause, guys. Spend your dollars because he's going to, it's going to a good cause. You spend more money, he can do more LIDAR and the like.
And it's going into somebody who's wants to share the information freely with the public. So, you know, you gave a perfect example of somebody who tried to monetize something that they found, right? And possibly keep information to themselves to gain from it. Like they're releasing data. They've released data through me and my videos. They're releasing data through their website and will be with the LIDAR stuff here eventually. So, you know, I'm really thankful to Chris and Linda for being willing to be transparent and, as they get information, put it out there and share it with the public so people can have all of the information to make their own decisions and form their own opinions about stuff, you know, which is really in alignment with like I shared with you earlier, like a huge focus of mine and the work that I do, sharing the drone videos the way that I do without putting a giant watermark over the whole thing or talking and stuff like that. So people can kind of come up with, you know, their own opinions about things and then share that and have conversations about it with people.
Yeah. Well, that's
good. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really important. A lot of the sites you visit and you bring back footage, like we were talking about at the beginning, just from so many different places. It's like what are some highlights would you say of your footage? Personally, the stuff that you feel is some of their best work. Fuck the number of view counts. What does Mike think?
My personal favorite places that I've been were Ireland, but my you know, my family's from Ireland. My family goes back to a town called Castle Pollard in Ireland. So it was really just a really, really special time being able to tour and travel all over Ireland. But some of those videos are kind of just vlog videos. I think I have a good video out on Newgrange, which is an ancient site there. It's a huge ancient site. I don't know if a lot of people are familiar with Newgrange, but I think it's 5,400 years old or something. I don't know. I think it's older than the pyramids. Baalbek is amazing. Seeing Baalbek and experiencing Baalbek was wholly unique compared to other places in the world. There's something about Baalbek that just it had every type of example of things that I'm looking for when I'm traveling, whether it's like pinch holes, nubs, megalithic blocks, scoop marks, different types of, you know, just all this kind of high technology looking stonework. And then, you know, some of my other favorite ones were some of the ones that have gotten the most attention, like Longyu Caves and Yangshan Quarry in China. And those were kind of passion projects for me because I filmed those places when I first started. And I knew that I wasn't going to be like a good filmmaker in terms of like my camera work. Maybe I can get there with the drone, and I think I'm doing good drone work. But I knew I wasn't gonna, you know, I wasn't gonna have like the best videos. I wasn't gonna have like the best footage on the ground. But what I did know that I could do was get to places that other people were either unable to or unwilling to go. And getting to Longyu Caves and Yangshan Quarry, I knew would be something that in the long run would be footage that would get used and used more and more and more, and that people would. Because there wasn't any, at the time, there wasn't anything out on some of these places except pictures. And filming Yangshan Quarry, the drone footage of Yangshan Quarry, Yangshan Quarry, Longyu Caves gets more of the attention. And it's an amazing site. But Yangshan Quarry, when you're talking about megaliths, that the largest megaliths in the world, that are maybe not fully removed. So the Stone of the Pregnant Woman and the other one there at Baalbek, you have Aswan Quarry and these different sites. Yangshan dwarfs both of those. I mean, really? And it never gets brought up in conversation. The pieces at Yangshan and Yangshan Quarry, there's three massive pieces there. The largest one is so much incredibly bigger than anything like the Stone of the Pregnant Woman at Baalbek or Aswan Quarry. It dwarfs them. That site is amazing. And if you haven't seen my drone video on the Yangshan Quarry, go check it out, because it just puts it into perspective from the air. So, you know, before I filmed that, there really was only pictures. There was no aerial footage. There was only these grainy pictures and stuff that you would see about Yangshan Quarry.
Uh-oh. Oh, no, I lose you again, Mike. Oh, no, where'd you go? Oh, Mike, hello. Oh, you know, hopefully it's not crashing for me, too. It's not the internet. Hope the stream's still going, guys. Hello? Hello, can you hear me now? Oh, well, let me see real fast here. I'll check on my phone and see if the stream is up, because if it's not, that would suck.
We lost part of our forest to fire several years ago.
I see. You see me clear? All right. Well, that's a good thing. Oh, well, crap. There went Mike. Damn it. Mike, where'd you go? Oh, well, this is Lance doing. All right. Well, I think Mike will probably show back up here in a minute. There he is. All right, no problem.
It's been so long.
I don't know what's going on. We got you back. We got you back. They're blaming Sorry Flint. You're okay. They're blaming Flint for it, saying that it was Sabatuji.
Yeah, that son of a gun. He's up to shenanigans again.
That's just being silly. Damn big archaeology. Yes, that's what it was. Maybe it was the reptilians. It could have been them as well. It's tough. Tough to say who did it. It was definitely one of them. No, so we were talking about the, I can't think of the name of the site, the Chinese one. I keep wanting to say Yanaguni, but that's the Japanese place. You were just talking about the place with the giant megaliths that you got. Yangshing Quarry. So if you go look that one up on YouTube, odds are it's your footage on pretty much every fucking video out there. Yeah. Is that what you're saying? Okay. Just checking to see what I was going to hear. Oh, I did.
Yeah, it's, you know, if you're watching any of these big channels that grab footage from everywhere else, I see stuff on videos sometimes and I'm like, hey, that's my footage, right? Like, so I think it's cool. Eventually, you know, I think people will be like, where's this new footage coming from? And, you know, eventually be like, it's me. I did it.
You know? Well, yeah. It's slowly coming out that you're the one that does this stuff, but, it's a fine line between, like keeping the information available and not, you know, kind of feeling like you're being a bit taken advantage of, I would imagine, because that would be frustrating to be like, man, I go put this effort into this. I go get good views on it, get some decent ad revenue. But then fucking Joe Faceless Channel over here goes and gets 5 million views on this shit. He's using my footage and he's fucking repeating what Wikipedia says. This is horse shit. No, Mike, where'd you go? Dang it. Oh, poop. Stupid internet. What's wrong with the stupid internet? I hope it's not my internet. Hope it's his internet. Hope it is the internet. But shit. Maybe it is my internet. Oh my God. Well, here we are again with it's just being me, as apparently. Sorry, guys. I don't know why that just keeps happening, but it fucking does, and that's irritating as hell. Maybe we'll wrap it up here in another 20 minutes if this keeps happening, because it is frustrating, I'm sure, for you guys and for me both. It's like he was just, and then the world stops us from hearing what Mike has to say. Exactly. Shaman's got it. He starts talking about the royalties for the work, and that was it. Dadgummit. Well, shit. Yeah, love you too, Severin Aaron. What's that's a? I'm trying to think what that freaking kanji symbol means. It's been too long since I took my Asian languages classes. But yeah, so some of you guys like magic. I didn't quit playing before Force of Will came out, but I did quit playing. Oh, I'll take some samples, Rue. Thanks. I quit playing at Ravnica, but the degenerate decks with the unlimited, like when you talked about degenerate decks with no banned cards, that was the old days. And in those days, we cheated shit with Black Lodi and stuff. Anyway, crap. Let me see. Maybe Mike is trying to reach me on the Twitters or something. Holy-do. Yeah, I got a message here from someone. Oh, here he's coming back. Hello.
Never happened to me, but I can hear people outside complaining. My internet went out, so thank God that's working.
Oh, okay, cool. Right on. Yeah, good.
It's working.
Yes, I've owned a few Black Lotus there, Dr. Strange Doom, but okay. Mike, you were talking about your making monies in the royalties, and you were just about to open your mouth as about there's other people ripping you off and shit, and then the powers that be were like, shut that fucker up.
Yeah, right. It's a fine line between getting paid for this work on you doing YouTube videos, because I'm not there yet. And I'm sure, you know, we're not paying bills quite yet. Right.
At 40 plus thousand followers.
Luckily, the content that I'm creating and I'm getting, if somebody wants to use it, can you still hear me?
I can, but yeah, you're breaking up a little there, but you're coming back. Oh shit! Oh, Mike! Oh, there you are. Well, there's a chair where Mike once was. Look at that! They cut it out. They kidnapped him. Dang it!
Hey there.
Yup, I'm here. They stole you out of your chair, man. You in the alternate dimension? Take a Pringles can, wrap it in copper wire.
What a nightmare.
Yeah, of course it has to start happening. Well, fart.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Hey man, this is you can hear me?
I can hear you, but it's, oh shit. Yeah, you keep breaking up, though. I keep losing you, and you keep popping back in. Well, crap. My internet signals are fine.
Yeah, it's me.
Okay.
The internet here, I don't know what's going on. Never had this happen before. It's
all right.
Not a setup thing. It's the actual internet just going in and out.
Well, you seem strong now. So
you don't want to talk, man. They're trying to shut us down, bro.
That's exactly.
We had a good hour run there, no interruption. That was nice. Yeah, man. It's hopefully I don't get interrupted again. It's a balancing act, you know. It's a balancing act of trying to grow something into. To a thing that you can do full time. And what I was saying was the good thing is that since I own the content and it's my footage, if somebody like Ancient Aliens who's using my footage for their show right now, they have to license it through me, right? You can't pull it off of the other channel that's using other people's footage. So there's that. But as for the viewer, The reason I put the footage out there is so that more people see these sites. So I don't get upset when I see big channels and I'm flipping through channels and I'm watching videos and I see that my footage is used in a video. I don't get upset. Especially if it's someplace like Sage Wall or something that I hope gets more attention to the larger community. It doesn't bother me at all. I know I filmed it. I know I was there. And especially like a site like SageWall, I really just want the public to become more aware that something like this exists. And with places like Yangshan Quarry or something that's another incredibly unique site that I filmed that have some of the best footage, drone footage in the world of, it's exciting to see conversations be generated around that because of, you know, the footage. I've been lucky enough to be able to go do.
You make a real impact.
Yeah, and my life was very different eight to ten years ago. You know, my life. You know, and I'm finishing up a book right now. I'll be releasing that And I hope that that book is impactful for people in a way that inspires people and to know that it's possible to change the trajectory that your life is on. Because the life that I was living 8 to 10 years ago was, I don't know who that person is anymore. And I worked hard, really hard, to change who I was and the things that I was doing with my life to something that was more positive, more impactful, pursuing a passion for something that I loved and I enjoyed. And now I wake up every day and I'm grateful for what I get to do. So
that's awesome.
When other people are seeing my work and enjoying it, whether it's on my channel or somebody else's channel, I never would have imagined, like I said, 10 years ago, that I would be in this place to even be participating in that. So it doesn't bother me. And for people that are in the community, eventually they'll be familiar with my work enough. I hang out with gentlemen like yourself talking about things and stuff like that. Eventually people become kind of aware of the different places I've been, what I've been doing, and the things that I've been a part of. But like I said, I wake up every day and I'm grateful to be doing what I'm doing. It's such a pleasure to be pursuing something that makes me happy and that I truly enjoy and that I'm passionate about. And that's more than enough reward, I think, to last me for the rest of my life. If I could do this for the rest of my life, I'd be happy. And I like flying the drone and filming things with it. Fun. Playing a video game.
I can't argue with that side of it. One that we would have killed for when we were kids. I got to say thanks to Trend, and I'll make sure and send Mike some money. Oh, totally. I'm kidding. And got to say thank you to Rizzy Unokaru. The mic drop part of the thing was sad. I agree. What do you do? What I wanted to say too about that was, when you've been noticed, even though I kind of think of you as one of those, like there's a channel I follow. I can't think of the guy's name right off the top of my head, but he's a musician guy who is behind the scenes, publicity guy, publisher, the A&R man is what he was for like 20 years in the 80s and 90s. And he was extremely well known in the industry, and nobody outside of the industry knows who he is. But like I mentioned to Graham, because I email Graham fairly regularly, and I mentioned to him that I was going to have you on for a live stream. And he was just like, oh, shit, that's going to be great. Mike's a great guy. He does all this work and it's underrated, blah, 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 blah. And I've noticed that about you, that pretty much everybody in the community that's in the community of content creating and stuff like that, what influencer or whatever the fuck the kids call it nowadays, they tend to know who you are. Like you're one of those A&R men, that you're not one of the flashy guys out in the front, but you're back behind there fiddling with the knobs and making sure things are where they're supposed to be. So that's kind of how I see it anyway.
I like it. And doing all this has enabled me to build wonderful relationships with people like Graham, who's amazing and supportive and so encouraging and such a kind human, him and his wife, Sampa, and meet other people and form relationships like with Jimmy and now with yourself and guys like Will over at Incredible History, and work with guys like the Snake Rose and connect with all kinds of people that are just really awesome and share the same kind of interests and passions. And the relationship thing, I've prioritized relationships over success or money, and it pays off every time. Putting people first has paid off every time. I've met wonderful people along the way, and it's been such a pleasure to do things like this, sit down with someone who has shared interests and goals and connect on things like we've been able to do for the last several hours. It's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. That is awesome.
Yeah.
I agree. Probably call it here in about another 10 minutes or so. I'm thinking about 9:30 my time, 2 hour stream, and then pray the internet gods let us. Yeah, exactly. I was gonna say pray the internet gods let us manage. But yeah, exactly what you said. The live streaming thing has been something that I've started late today. It's something that I've avoided at first because of the difficulty in my personal life. I help take care of my mom. I help my dad take care of my mom, and she's bedridden. And I'm a single parent of a teenager who is an athlete, and I don't miss his games or none of that crap. I don't make him. So like today he had practice, and so I had to kick this 30 minutes later because they screwed stuff around. It's kind of a pain in the ass. And so I've avoided this part of it for a long time, but since starting, it's been great. It's only my third time, but like everybody I've talked to has been fun to chat with and whatnot. And it's good to make these connections that are just like, it's my third time hosting it. This is my fifth one. And the other guys like Jimmy and Matt Bell, it's like, they were just basically other like having live streams with them made me want to start doing my own because it was so nice to connect with these people that are, like-minded, like you said. No, thanks, Shaman. Absolutely. Yeah. Of course, our beards are unmatched. Shit, guys, look, this ain't ZZ Top, but it's close enough.
Yeah, we're both going for the same gray look, I think.
That's right. I'm a couple of years older than you, so I've ran off with the extra gray, but that's you'll get there.
I don't know how I had maybe 3 inches more on my beard earlier in the week, and I just once it starts getting into my neck, I can't. It starts driving me crazy. So I'd love to be able to get mine out as long as you've got yours, but there's a length that I can't seem to kind of get past.
Yeah, I understand. It does get itchy at that spot right there.
Yeah, you got to get past that, and it's okay. I'm sure.
Stanktron says, "Shit, if I had 3 inches more," but then you sound like my ex. But oh, well, thank you, Daniel. I appreciate it. Muchas gracias. You guys are tremendous. But yeah, the Sage Wall is a site that I definitely want to go and check out. It's one that it's funny to me is like people start immediately as soon as they see I'm having you on. It's like, but the Sage Wall, we already know that's a geological formation, don't we? It's like, well, I mean, I don't know. I haven't been there. You been there? You a geologist? Well, no, but it kind of looks like one. Well, fucking okay. It kind of looks like a wall too. I mean, if you squint, it kind of looks like the lines on my old TV. Maybe we should send some pros out there and get some work done. You call me crazy. Yeah. That initial skepticism just out the gate. It's like, dude, that's a scientist I don't want to send. If that is a scientist, I don't want to send him. If right out the gate, they look out, they're like, oh, that can't be. You may as well tell me God did it, dude. You ain't even being impartial about this, and that's not what we need.
Yeah, and I'm not. I think people, because I've documented it so much, I think people feel like I think myself and the property owner, Chris and Linda, are invested in pursuing the evidence as we can and as more and more becomes available. That's the goal. And like we've talked about on here, I happen to think it's worth pursuing. But I'm not sitting here claiming that it's part of an ancient wall and mega complex that, and all this other stuff that, you know, we don't really have any evidence of yet, but I'm hopeful. It'd be amazing.
Yeah, that would be really amazing. And the possibility exists, which is what, you know, it looks like it could be. So that's interesting in and of itself. And I've seen a lot of in this community, sadly, when something ends up with that potential this could potentially lean into the Atlantis crowd, it definitely will get like pushback from people that it's like, man, what the fuck is wrong with you? It's like, It may well be. This may well be a geological formation, a big fat nothing burger as far as Atlantis or whatever goes. And if that's the case, that's the case. But the you actually have to do like you have to give the thing a fair shake in order to get there. If you don't, we can all sit here and say what we think that it should be. Like, fucking, that's whatever.
Right. I mean, how's the there's an old quote that goes, "If the truth kills them, let them die."
Yeah, exactly. That is exactly it. Shit,
like, if I'm pursuing the truth, then I'm okay with what I'm doing. If I'm just going after the truth, like, and presenting things as they are, instead of a narrative of what I want it to be, if I'm doing that, pursuing the truth, I'm okay with that. And people can say whatever they want. And the place, people may think that the Sage Wall is not worth investigating because they feel like it's an ancient, it's a geological formation. That's fine. I get those comments sometimes on the channel. That's okay. I'm still going to do go up there and document all this and participate in sharing the work and helping Chris and Linda figure it out, do the work, get the findings, share it with people. And that's not going to change anything about what I'm doing.
Yeah, and that's it shouldn't.
And in the meantime, if you want, you can watch one of the other 700 videos that I have on my channel on ancient sites around the world from all over the place. So, this is just one aspect of what I'm bringing to the table in terms of documenting things around the world. It's just one thing. I think it's a really, really cool and interesting thing. Yeah. But, there's, like I said, I've got like over 700 videos out on my channel from all over the world, from ancient sites that some are relatively unknown, until maybe recently, like Longyu Caves or Yangsheng Quarry or the pyramids in China or, all kinds of stuff. So all that's there on my channel too. So if you like ancient history and you want to see something that's for sure, like really unique, go check out any of that other stuff. Yeah. I mean, I don't fault anybody for having their opinion on the site. But again, I think Sage Wall is wholly worth investigating further. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Doing new things.
Yeah. The investigation side of these things is important. And, it's interesting that like the way that you put that if somebody wants to be sure, you got plenty of other sites that you're certain are ancient if they really want to look at that. And if they're this is here,
yeah,
too, that's
easy. Yeah, if that's what you're interested in, easy. Any other video, go click on it. But I do have I have a whole playlist of ancient sites in America, so there's stuff like Balance Rock, which in my opinion is clearly a dolmen over on the East Coast. I think that one is just unequivocally and for sure an ancient dolmen. There's a whole video of me just walking around it and showing you underneath it and above it. You can go check it out. I mean, I've visited so many dolmens around the world. That is just a dolmen. But I think the more interesting topic to get into is why does every megalithic structure in the Americas stop at basically about Teotihuacan or Mexico? Why does it end there?
It all turns to dirt after that. Everything after that that's big is dirt.
Right. So, or explained away as something like a glacial erratic when it comes to the dolmen, like Balance Rock. We have glaciers that are advancing and retreating every year all over the world, and we don't see this happening. There's stuff worth investigating in America, and I've said this for the last couple of years, and I think America has so much more left to uncover or left to show us. Like, there's so much more left to uncover in America when it comes to ancient sites, that it's this untapped land of, of different things that we could be finding. And there's all sorts of stuff that people are completely unaware of, like the mound builders and mound cultures and stuff, and how extensive that is. Gregory Little, if you want to get into that, go check out Gregory Little on Twitter. And he is just dropping stuff constantly. I had no idea that there was that extensive amount of these ancient structures around the country, all over the place, thousands.
Yeah. I grew up near St. Louis, and they raised a bunch just to build the city.
Yeah. And you have, I recently visited Cahokia. What an incredible place. And then the area is a lot more extensive than you see today. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's huge, huge site.
Yeah, at the height of that city, it was larger than London at the same time. Mm-hmm. That's a massive structure. But there's all sorts of interesting things to get into in the Americas.
Well, there's one.
What's that?
Oh, there's one idea that I've been having ever since me and my son took the road trip down through the channeled scab lands, and I'm like going nuts because they haven't been barely touched at all. All through there's mesas that were basically not, like when the floodwaters came through, there's a piece of land that became an island that's back. It's still got topsoil on these mesas from the flood. So like it's old. It didn't get chopped up when the rest of the ground got ate up, right? If you understand what I'm saying, there's a mesa there that's old ground on top. They're almost completely unexcavated. There've been like some people have gone up to the top of these things. Archaeologists in the 70s, they gathered crap, they put them in boxes, and they barely ever look at it. Those to me are probably the most tantalizing places because they're so inaccessible. Nobody goes up on these things. They're fucking huge, and I mean they're the areas that's survived the flood and that are inaccessible. So if there was anything of human activity in that region, that would be the place that it would potentially would be found. So in your travels, if you get a chance to go to the channeled scab lands, stick a drone on top of one of those damn mesas for me, would you?
So you live out that way?
Yeah, I live in Spokane, Washington, over on the west on the east side of Washington.
Scab land sometimes. It's been on my radar for a while, but I haven't looked into it as much because I typically focus on like megaliths and stuff.
Yeah.
But I'd love to come out there. You'll have to show me around.
Yeah, that would be great. I'd love to. We could make a bit of it, and it's not too far from here to Montana. We could hit the whole nine yards.
There we go. We got a trip planned.
Hell yeah, we do. That would be awesome.
Go through the scab lands. You can show me around. I'll take you over to Sagewall and some of these places in Montana. Make a whole journey of it. Share with people.
That would work. That would work.
Yeah, man. I'd love that.
I would too, Mike. That would be great. Awesome. Well, this has been really fun, man. Look, we should do this again sometime. So you've got, I'll make sure when we're done here, put your links to your channel down in the description. You're on Twitter. You're on Instagram too, right?
Yeah. All my socials are WWOLFPROD, W Wolf Prod. And my channel's Wandering Wolf. Yeah.
Awesome.
Got a book coming out soon, like I mentioned before. And I'll be announcing. I leave for Peru. I do tours now, and have a Peru tour in a few weeks. Down in Peru, going through Peru, that one's sold out. And I'll be announcing. I'll be doing two tours in 2025, and I'll be announcing the next one here in a few weeks.
Hell yeah! Awesome.
Yeah. So if you want to come, I purposely try to put those prices low. On the tours, so people can be a part of like coming on these experiences and seeing these places. Like our Peru trip came in at under $3,000. So nice. 9 days in Peru, hitting all these, and it focuses on all these ancient sites for under $3,000. I think you'll find comparable trips are about $1,500 or more over that. And so I really like being able to put something out there where people can participate, come see these things for themselves. And, it's, it's been a joy to put this to put these tours on. And I've been traveling so much and doing this now for so long. Being able to share that experience with people is really awesome. It's a lot of fun seeing other people's faces light up when they see a megalithic site for the first time or an ancient site or experience it in a different culture. That's really cool.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, hell yeah. Guys, go check out Mike's stuff if you haven't already. And thank you guys for watching. I'm going to go ahead and call it a night, guys. Take care.
Thanks for having me on.